the very kind introduction and setting the scene for me. It's an honor and privilege to be part of this panel. In fact, I was meant to be part of the second panel, but I was changed at the last moment. So it's indeed an honor and privilege for me to be with the other panelists. It's a very tricky question, whether or not there's going to be a contagion effect of what's happened in Egypt, what has happened in Tunisia, what may happen in Libya, would it come to other parts of the Muslim world? And I think every country, whether Muslim or not, are thinking the same thing. Will this come to our country? And if it does, why would it come to our country? And if it doesn't, why would it not come to our country? I want to just speak from the perspective of Malaysia. But before I do that, I want to just underscore the importance of the younger generation. The revolution that happened, whether in Cairo, whether in Tunis, or what is happening today in Libya, has largely been driven by youthful idealism. It is a change which I think all the panelists have agreed that's come from a perspective of moderation, in a sense that it's not extreme rhetoric, it's not religious radicalism, but rather it's this clamoring for good governance, for justice, for representation, very basic values of humanity, which have been denied to a vast majority of people in the Arab world for a very long time. And I think the advent of technology, education, young people being able to talk to each other without much restrictions, although there are still restrictions in the traditional media, but through social network and technology, I think that's been able to give them the courage to actually pursue these things. And that's why I think my perspective, Malaysia, for instance, I think largely Malaysia, even Indonesia, I had this short conversation with Dr. Anis earlier, who's from Indonesia. We agreed that we don't think this is going to catch on in Southeast Asia, for the simple fact that the underlying factors are completely different. If you look at the countries that are undergoing these tumultuous times today in the Middle East, they have serious problems in terms of unemployment, in terms of poverty. 40% of the Arab world lives below the poverty line. These are basic economic development standards that have not been met regardless of the fact however long these people have been entrenched in power. But if you look at countries like Indonesia, Malaysia, even Turkey for that matter, I think the fundamental difference with these countries and why this effect is not going to come to our countries is that good governance defeats extremism, good governance defeats dysfunctionalism. All these things happen in these countries, Libya, Egypt, Tunisia, and may spread to other countries simply because of the absence of good governance. And that's why I think, for me, the most important thing we need to do as the younger generation, whether it's in Malaysia, Indonesia, or other parts of the Arab world which are undergoing this transformation, is to ensure that beyond elections, I agree with Dr. Chandra, beyond elections, elections is just one part of it. You can have regular elections. You can have free elections. You can even have fair elections, but that doesn't guarantee good governance. You may have a series of terrible governments coming into place. Every 5 years, you get replaced with a new government, but it doesn't mean you're going to get good governance. Things being sorted out, eradication of corruption, eradication of poverty, education standards, health standards. There isn't a single Muslim country in the top 30 of the United Nations Human Development Index. There isn't a single Muslim country in the top 15 of the Corruption Perception Index. That speaks volumes about the fact that certain standards, and these are not Muslim standards, these are universal standards, are not adhered to in the Muslim world. So for me, I think the most important thing is to look at good governance. As far as Malaysia is concerned, we have been very serious in terms of transforming the economy. When I talk about good governance, ladies and gentlemen, it's not a simple matter of freedoms. It's not a simple matter of more democratic space. It's also little things that you and I may not see, but people on the ground feel very strongly about. Relative deprivation. People who are educated may not see this, but for the person who lives on $2 a day, $3 a day, he feels that relative deprivation is a strong cause, a strong categorical imperative to move and to become politically active. So in Malaysia, I think under the present leadership of Dato' Sri Najib, our Prime Minister, we've introduced a transformation program that looks at eradicating corruption, eradicating poverty, building up a sound education system, a human capital that we can be proud of, attracting talent back to Malaysia, retaining talent in Malaysia. and to create an economy which is a high-income economy. We want to make sure that with food prices going up, with resources going up, prices of resources going up, we're able to lift the income and purchasing power of Malaysians so that they don't feel that relative deprivation, whether it's in within Malaysia or outside of Malaysia. And I think Turkey has done a fantastic job over the last decade or so in lifting living standards so that people do not feel that urge to bring about change, whether it is peaceful or otherwise. Secondly, Khun Surin, I just want to keep my remarks short and tight, is that when we talk about a global movement for peace, justice, human dignity, for moderates, wasatia, moderation, as our Prime Minister has said, we must make sure that the moderates win at home first. My biggest concern is that the global elites, we talk about moderation. That's not a big problem. You know, we sit around fora such as this. We talk about moderation. We talk about the middle path. But do moderates win at home? Do moderates carry the day at home? Does moderate, and again, I use this word loosely, does moderate Islamic thinking, theology that is rooted in modernization, modernity, ijtihad, does that really prevail amongst discourse at home? Or are we held hostage by rigid conservative forces, literalists, things that refuse to ignore or ignore the modernization that takes place in our economy? So my big issue is when we talk about global movement of moderates, if they don't win at home, then they're definitely not going to be able to carry the day at the international level. So I hope that with the changes in the Middle East today, which has taken place with a largely moderate political movement, that will remain to be the case when the transition happens. And my last point is quite a serious one, I think. We've all been talking about justice, dignity, a global standard, as our eminent panelists said. But two things. One, there are bias and discrimination still inherent in all societies. Whether you're talking about Main Street in USA, whether you're talking about the Arab Street, the feeling of us and them is still very, very pronounced. And that is something that is prevalent at the grassroots level. It's something that we have refused to or been unable to address. We address it at the policy level, at the top level, that's not an issue. But at the level of society, this people-to-people contact is still absent. It's still absent. We can talk about it at the international level, but at the local level, it's still absent. And when we talk about a global system based on justice, the international political system is fundamentally unjust. And until and unless you look at the global international system, whether it's the United Nations, the Security Council, the IMF, the World Bank, and the fundamental injustice that takes place in the global system, then it's very difficult for us to talk about a standard by which global humanity can adhere to. Personally, we can do it, but at a systemic level, it's still absent. So I think those are the concerns from a younger perspective. I'm very hopeful that with the changes in the Arab world that we will see better governance. But again, we are really not addressing the fundamental issue, which is how people feel at a people-to-people or person-to-person level. And until and unless we can overcome those bias and discrimination, I think we are still a few steps away from coming towards a global humanity. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.